Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances, check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model, offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
Welcome to the Migration Podcast, your guide for waterfowl hunting tactics, gear, and conservation. And now, your host, Ryan Halbly.
What is up, everyone? As Johnny M. said, I'm your host, Brian Halbly. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in to the Migration Waterfowl Podcast, presented by Bluebird Waterfowl. Check out their new spinning wing decoy prototype wings. They're offering a 6-wing prototype set to anyone interested in testing them out. Check them out at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or call them at 800-564-0914 and be one of the first people to get your hands on them. This episode is also brought to you by these other fine partners: The Duck Hole and Company, Rig 'em Right Outdoors, Flight Day Ammunition, and CK Custom Calls. I'll be telling you more about all of these partners later in the show. This episode marks the 1-year anniversary of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. 52 straight weeks of great guests, interesting conversations, and lots of shared waterfowl hunting knowledge. I've become a better waterfowl hunter because of it, and I hope you have too. Talking to waterfowl hunters from all over North America has pushed me to travel more and experience new flyways, species, and the great people who live and hunt there. Some quality waterfowl companies have found value in what I'm trying to build here, and I've also been blessed with some great partners. And I can't thank all of you out there enough for tuning in every week and supporting all of my content. So here's to the next 52 episodes. I can't wait to see where this year takes me. I did manage to get out for the opening day of the Ohio turkey season. I headed out Saturday morning, day before Easter. It was pretty warm. I think it hit 80 plus here in western Pennsylvania. And when I drove over to Ohio the next morning, Saturday morning, it was still like 72 degrees. One of the warmest opening turkey seasons I can ever remember. Got down to the farm in plenty of time. I went down to my Ohio hunting lease. Been getting a lot of birds on camera down there in this one field. Wanted to keep it kind of low-key and not drag a bunch of gear in and take up too much of the day. I was just trying to get a quick hunt in because it was my wife's birthday, as I mentioned last week. Her birthday was actually on Easter, so girls were coming home from college Saturday to celebrate Karen's birthday, and I didn't want to take up too much time getting all kind of turkey gear set up and broken down. So had some nice mature birds on camera just about every day in this one field. There's already a box blind there. It was kind of a lazy setup, if you will, but perfect for what I was just trying to get out and get a quick hunt in. So it was pretty slow starting out in the morning. I didn't hear any gobbles at all. Heard a couple of shots way off in the distance. This farm that I lease is over 400 acres, so we don't get to hear too much up and close shooting like public land or some smaller properties out there. And most of the neighbors have bigger tracks. And it was pretty quiet until I guess about 8 o'clock or so. The birds started showing up. Lots of jakes. Had a group of four jakes come in first. And then a lone hen came in and hung around, fed in the field a little bit, and then she wandered off. Then the jakes wandered off, and then three other jakes came in, a group of jakes. And it wasn't until about, 9:15 or so, I heard the first gobble. And never did get an opportunity, never did have that Tom in range. But pretty cool morning nonetheless. Got to see a lot of turkeys and pass the time. Beautiful morning to be out there. Definitely worth the drive down there. It's about an hour and a half from my home. But so I got about a 4-hour hunt in and then a 3-hour drive round trip. So pretty decent morning. It would have been nice to get a gobbler, but as I mentioned before, it was kind of a lazy setup. Keeping an eye on that field with trail cameras and having the box blind there. So sometimes, you know, you got to work hard to get results. You guys know sometimes the harder you work, the more success you have. But I had some high hopes with those birds coming in there every day. And had I stuck around longer, maybe I'd have had a close opportunity at a mature bird, but, you know, you got to prioritize things, be there for the family when it's time to be there for the family. And That's a lot more important than me filling a turkey tag. So we'll see. I might get back out this weekend. Have to see what's going on. It seems like the weather has finally turned here. Lots of yard work going on as always, cutting grass, getting things ready around the house outside. So we'll see how much time that takes up to see if there's any more time this weekend for turkey hunting. I've also got that boat project that's been looming over my head. It's going to take quite a bit of work, but I should be able to get that taken care of. Hopefully sooner than later, because I'd like to get some fishing in too before waterfowl season. But that's about all I have for you. Life is good. Can't complain. Like I said, I got to catch up with my daughters and the rest of my extended family over Easter. I hope you all got to do the same. It's always a nice time catching up with family that you don't get to see all the time. My sister-in-law was really tired of ham. They usually get a big ham for Easter. And I said, well, I can make a brisket and a couple of pork shoulders if you want to do something different. And she, of course, jumped at that opportunity. And, you know, I don't know if any of you out there ever do much smoking, especially bigger cuts like briskets. You know, you're talking 10, 15, 20 hours of smoking, depending on the size and the just the type of brisket that you have. So that was a full day of prep, and then another full day of monitoring that. Thankfully, I switched to a pellet smoker a few years back. I used to do the wood thing in the offset and the charcoal and wood thing and in a Weber Smoky Mountain, which made things a lot easier. But man, having a pellet smoker with an onboard Wi-Fi and Bluetooth system that you can monitor the temperature, not only the smoker, but the probes that go in the meat as well. And I've used that for a whole host of wild game too, and smoking goose pastrami and duck tasso ham for gumbo and all kinds of other applications. So it's a pretty fun hobby. It can get frustrating sometimes, and it's time consuming, but certainly the end product is well worth it. The family was going nuts for the brisket and pulled pork at the Easter gathering. So that made all the hard work worth it. All the people that enjoyed it and thanked me for doing that. So, and that's about it. That's all I got for you this week. Trying to think what else is coming up that's of interest. Just excited to hit my 1 year mark here. It's hard to believe how fast it went. And we're just going to keep plugging away and bringing you more content and doing some more traveling and meeting some more great people and hopefully building some more partnerships. I've got a couple of more in the works. Like I've been saying, it seems like since I've hit this 1 year mark, things are starting to really gain traction. So thank you all for coming back again, and I'll keep you posted. On this episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast, I'll be talking with Jeff Coates from Maryland. Jeff is a seasoned waterfowl guide, and he shares his journey into waterfowl hunting and guiding. We discuss the evolution of the waterfowl industry, the challenges of transitioning from a regular job to guiding, and the importance of customer service in the guiding business. Jeff also reflects on the changes in hunting regulations, the impact of social media on his business, and he shares memorable hunting experiences and favorite species. Jeff also shares his extensive experiences living the waterfowl lifestyle, discussing various bird sightings, safety measures, and the importance of communication and guided hunts. He emphasizes the joy and passion he finds in his work, while also addressing some future plans for his guiding business, Pit Boss Waterfowl, and the significance of living life to the fullest. We also talk about some decoy strategies and the expectations of clients and waterfowl guides. Thanks to the good Lord for blessing us with another opportunity to get together for another episode. So let's get into episode number 52. So I got to ask, did you have anything good on the smoker tonight?
No, we're still kind of, we like to do leftovers, and we're still doing a leftover sirloin tip from last night. So,
okay.
Slice it up. And the only thing Karen and I talked as we drove, we dog trained today, so we a good hour's drive each way. And the only thing we kind of regret is we did not break out the slicer. I guess you could call us lazy, but the slicer requires a good amount of effort.
Oh yeah,
to get that thing cleaned back up. So we did not. That's the only thing that would have made it better was the slicer, but we didn't break. It was just a little one. If we did a eight, nine, 10 pounder, we would have. But this thing was just little, so we just hand sliced it. But no, nothing. It's sitting right over here in the corner. Nothing on tonight, but we did enjoy it last night.
Yeah, you're always making me hungry with all those good posts on Instagram, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
You've been doing that a long time, smoking stuff on the pit?
Yeah, I think probably 2016 maybe we really dove in hot and heavy.
Okay.
Yeah, probably ever since then, yeah. It's the old address we were at. Had a couple different. I mean, we like literally cooked outside all the time. We had a vertical smoker. We had the, basically just a pellet grill. We also had a vertical smoker. It ran off pellets, and we used that. I mean, I do my mom's biscuits for her on Sunday, kind of thing. We used that for a little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah. Those pellet smokers are the way to go. I resisted for a lot of years, but man, it's nice not to be babysitting them. Yeah. A smoker with those things.
We resisted also, and we even in the beginning we even kept our gas grill, because we're gonna still use the gas grill, and like we found out pretty quickly that we don't really need a gas grill anymore. So that thing,
sure,
it happened pretty quick.
Yeah,
the switchover.
That was my point of no return when my wife said, as long as the brisket and the pulled pork taste the same, then you can get rid of the other smokers, and it worked out. So
very nice, very nice.
So everybody, if you haven't recognized my guest voice tonight, I'm sure you've all heard of him, Mr. Jeff Coates, Pit Boss Waterfowl.
Very kind, thank you.
Appreciate you taking time to come on the show tonight.
100%, 100%, man. I enjoy talking. So like I said earlier, I'll ramble, so you may need to reel me back in.
Yeah. I'm sure there's probably not too many people left out there that haven't heard of you, but if you wouldn't mind doing a quick intro and walking us through how you got started in waterfowl.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I'm Jeff Coates. I happen to be a U.S. Coast Guard licensed captain. This past season was my 25th season of running pit boss waterfowl. Basically, I really kind of, in the beginning, maybe didn't target 100% on sea ducks, but sea ducks is my niche. I take people sea duck hunting. Well, back in the day, it was a 107-day season. Even if duck season was only 30 days in Atlantic Flyway, you still had 107 days for sea ducks, and a lot of that's changed over the years. But, right outside, currently I'm in Whaleyville, Maryland. It's just outside Ocean City, Maryland. And, I enjoy doing what I do. My wife, Karen, she gets and understands me. She's part of everything that I do. And the old slogan, ducks, dogs, and decoys, is pretty much, pretty much what we do 365 days a year. Currently I struggle, maybe I'm dog training too much and not carving enough. I put my time in yesterday on some decoys. I did not touch decoys yet today. When they're not going to get touched today, probably.
Okay.
I guide full time. The sea duck, there is no more special sea duck season anymore, but my duck season currently is 60 days. So very fortunate. We'll be full for those 60 days. And, just trying to, I guess, try to live the dream, I guess.
So who got you started in waterfowl?
Who got me started in waterfowl? I really entered waterfowl hunting through turkeys, believe it or not.
Okay.
And way back in the day, it would have been 1987. I guess it would have been. I worked for a civil engineer firm, and one of the fellows there was heavily into waterfowl. He had not turkey hunted, but I wasn't heavily into turkeys, but I turkey hunted some, but really wanted to go duck hunting. So I took him turkey hunting, and in turn he took me for my first duck hunt. And pretty much ever since that, I've been hooked. I really do have to say, with my guiding, probably my number one mentor with sea duck hunting and just kind of dialing me into guiding was Donald Hughes. He passed away in 2004. He taught me about the internet. He taught me a lot of things. He always would say he was full of useless knowledge, but man, I really appreciated his knowledge.
That's great. So what inspired you to start your own guiding business?
In a different life, I was married. I'm currently married, but marriage number one, kind of went through a little change of life at a younger age, got married young, 23 years old or so. And at 6 or 7 years past that, I just made a change in life. And kind of the joke, I guess, is I guide because I didn't want a real job. And I kind of bought in. We were my daughter's mom. I was married, but I don't know if I want to refer to her as my daughter's mom or my ex-wife. But sure, regardless, sure. We were in a family business, so kind of self-employed at that time. And so I guess that I have to give some credit there. Especially to my ex-father-in-law, because he did teach me many things about being self-employed. And although maybe, guiding and duck hunting isn't the normal business or the normal small business, I kind of took a lot of those things that I learned with our small business and kind of try to apply them to waterfowl hunting. But kind of I will say it was a rebellious kind of thing, but definitely just kind of a change of life where, I did not want the real job.
Okay.
So to speak.
Sure. So you were doing some hunting before that. What do you think was the biggest challenge in turning that hunting passion into a business?
I guess in the very beginning is having support of my family, specifically at the time, my mother, just having her support. And especially with my daughter was very young at the time. My daughter, Molly, was, I guess she would have been 3.5, 4 years old when we got separated and got divorced. And with having a visitation with her, my mom helped out quite a bit with that. But that was probably some family support and helping me and allowing me to make the change of I want to say not having. Well, in our small business, I took a check, I took a draw, so I did get I did have a regular pay, but kind of making the transition from that to basically kind of only getting paid, basically October through January. And again, back in the day, it was 107 days. So pretty much it was always open during duck season. So I guess that was number one. And then number two, just because you say you're a guide doesn't mean that there's people, calling you, knocking on your door, say, hey, let's go.
Right.
So in that very beginning, it was a little on the slower side.
I'm sure. This episode is brought to you by Bluebird Waterfowl, creator of the Animator. The Animator is revolutionizing the waterfowl community with the world's first spinning wing decoy conversion kit. Turn your existing spinner into a water motion decoy in seconds and learn how to finish more birds with the sound of water. Guaranteed to boost your hunt or your money back. Flaring birds with your spinner is a thing of the past. Try one risk-free at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or at your favorite local outdoor supplier. So you've been around a long time. How's the waterfowl industry changed since you started? What do you think are maybe like the top three things?
Did you just call me old?
No, I just said you were doing it a long time.
I'm just messing with you. I have a birthday coming up this year. And this one may bother me a little bit, but the one 10 years ago didn't bother me as much.
Sure,
but this one may affect me a little bit. What has changed? Here in Maryland specifically, or at the Atlantic Flyway, more the like duck seasons. I can go that route. I can tell you there's a whole bunch more people that are guiding today that. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I knew they hunted, but they didn't guide.
Okay.
So there's been, I'll rewind. I'll answer my own. I'll stop. this season's. So the special sea duck season, again, our regular duck season was 60 days. In Maryland, we had a week in October, 2 weeks in November, and then mid-December to the end of January. But the special sea duck season was always open. It was 107 days open, kind of that first Saturday in October, and went to the end of January. So that was many, many years the special sea duck season was there. They reduced the special, and the sea duck limit was 7 birds with no more than 4 scoter. So when they reduced the special sea duck season to only 60 days, they reduced the 7-bird limit to 5, and in that 5, you still couldn't have any more than 4 scoter, but now all of a sudden there's a 4 old squall long tail duck limit and or a 4-bird eider limit in this that special sea duck season. That went on for 6 years, and then they've, because of, again, more interest, more guides, more people shooting sea ducks, they did away with the special sea duck season, and now, currently, doesn't matter what state you're in the Atlantic Flyway, whenever duck season's open, you can target sea ducks, and specifically in Maryland, it's a 6-bird limit, but in that 6 birds, you can't have more than 4 sea ducks, and in the 4 sea ducks, you can't have more than 3 of 1 species. So okay. I've definitely, long-winded to say, I've definitely seen the season change, the bag limit change, and then also I've definitely seen much, much more interest in shooting sea ducks.
Yeah, for sure. So being in the Atlantic Flyway, is there anything that has you hopeful for the birds that use that flyway?
If anything, I'm on the worried side. Again, we already established that I'm older. When I first started duck hunting, regular duck season in the Atlantic Flyway, specifically Maryland, was a 30-day season 3-duck limit. And again, sea ducks was still 107 days then. But yeah, when I first started duck hunting, it was only a 30-day season. So very maybe selfishly or very personally, because of there is no more special sea duck season, will the 60-day duck season last forever? I have to say probably not. Yeah. There's going to be a change somewhere. So does it drop to 45 days or does it drop to 30 days? And when it does, that cuts my season in half or 2/3, right? So I can only my sea ducks right now I can target are 60 days, but if it drops a 30-day season or a 45-day season, those are my days I can shoot sea ducks. So I don't know. Hughes taught me way back in the day things run in cycles. We've definitely been on a very upswing cycle of it's been 60 days forever. That little story I just told you about, 30 days, 3 birds. I tell younger guys that here and they're like, what are you talking about? Like that was duck season. And they're like, no, it wasn't. I said, yeah, it was,
Yeah.
It's been, if I had to guess, I'd say probably, it's probably been a good 24, 26 years that it's been the 60 days. But prior to that, it was not. So I don't know. We'll see. I used to target Brant back specifically when it was a 3-bird limit. But this past couple of years, it's only been a 30-day one bird season, and I still, it's going to be open this year, but I mean they're super close to that season will be closed. They need to be at least 100,000 birds in Atlantic Flyway for there to be a season, and I heard they count them during the winter count, and that the index, if you will, was 105,000. So I mean, there's I'm gonna say I don't want to be like doom and gloom. But I think maybe we're kind of starting possibly to go on a downward swing or downward sure. cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough when we went to that 2-mallard limit in Pennsylvania for the longest time. I know a lot of guys got out of waterfowl hunting, and, that hurts everybody. That hurts the retailers. That hurts the manufacturers. That hurts the state agencies. So, yeah, it's... That's why I was trying to, when I asked you if you saw anything positive, because it's hard to really talk about a whole lot of the positives. It just doesn't seem like there's many there.
I think for 2 years with COVID, they didn't do any flying. And then I have to think back to, it was a brand, like I'm going to use Brant as an example. It was a 50 day season, 2 birds. And they continued that through those years that they didn't do any, aerial flying surveys for those winter counts. And it's just like the AP Goose, that's when the Ungava Peninsula, They didn't do any studies on those during that period either, and kind of, you know, the season stayed the same. So I don't know if it's maybe a little bit of catch up from that. I don't think ducks were as affected as much as Brant and the AP goose there, but yeah. But still, you know, if they're not doing any whatever they do, and I'm going to rewind a little bit. I always kind of think too, like the whole duck count thing. It's more of like an index, right? It's not the exact number of birds, but it's the way I always thought of it as an index. As long as they're kind of doing it the same every year, it's a good barometer to what the population is. It's up or down. But I mean, when they give you those numbers, they say that I don't believe that that's the exact population of waterfowl.
Right. So do you get to chase puddle ducks much, or you spend most of your season out on the big water?
Yeah, these days, especially again with no special sea ducks in it, sea duck season anymore, I definitely, you know, I'm nonstop on sea ducks. When the Brant limit was bigger, more of a, you know, longer season and or the bigger bag, I would in the afternoons go, you know, fun hunt myself on that. But really these days, my only fun hunting for specifically puddle ducks would be, we usually take a trip, usually October, November. This past year we went up in December, but Prince Edward Island, Canada. And that's kind of been the most of my duck hunting these maybe since about 2017. Yeah, that's been the majority of my puddle duck hunting.
Okay. I know guys further south of you have told me about their concerns with some farm-raised mallards getting mixed in with the population there. Have you seen any of that where you're at?
Well, I mean, Maryland, whether they're registered or not, Maryland is a big state to release mallard. RSAs, regulated shooting areas, there's two ways to set them up. You can set it up that your property, the birds you release, you can shoot them during duck season. They don't count to your duck limit. So as long as it's got a clip toe, you know, it's not a wild bird. So you can basically shoot as many as you want of those. And or they set them up as like a flighted released tower shoot kind of thing. I think that goes from September to September 1st to March 15th or something in that ballpark. But now we have a tremendous amount of when I say tremendous, to me it's a lot of RSAs and regulated shooting areas and released mallard here in Maryland.
Interesting. This episode is also brought to you by the Duck Hole and Company, attracting feathers together. They are a full-service habitat company located in North Carolina. If you have questions about waterfowl habitat or need some work done on your property, contact them through any of their social media platforms at the Duck Hole and Company. They can also fix you up with golden millet, also known as the duck buffet, and the best bang for your duck. So you said there's a lot of guys that have come on board, got into guiding the last 10 years or so. You're obviously doing something very right. What do you think sets Pit Boss Waterfowl apart from everybody else?
I think part of it is that I've been doing it the length of time that I have been doing it. Again, Donald Hughes taught me a tremendous amount back in the day. He helped me get a strong internet presence. Again, back in the day. Starting out, I would run an ad in Wildfowl. That definitely helped put me on the map. I would get if I subscribed back in the day to Wildfowl, but if I didn't, I could tell you when the magazine came out because I get phone calls and emails. pretty strong, you know, little spike or influx of people wanting to hunt. I don't know. Today, I guess probably, you know, I try to take videos daily, and I know that the videos that I post up, whether they're good or bad. there's one that's just over 35 million views here recently on Instagram.
Wow.
And it's just all like negative. There was, you know, I don't know, there's 15, 20 replies to that video today alone. And it's pretty much it's some people that hunt, but basically it's people that don't hunt. And, you know, it's very negative. But to answer your question, I think part of that presence that I have of posting up, basically, I won't say they're raw videos, but I mean it's what I do every day, and you know it's I think that definitely helps, but maybe more of that I've just done it so long is probably, yeah. I guess if I had to, you know, rank everything there, I'd say probably the length of time that I've done it.
Sure. And I think those videos give a really good insight into a lot of what you do for your customers. I mean, even little things that are probably like you don't even pay attention to anymore, like serving chowder on the boat and, you know, keeping everybody comfortable. That's that little bit of stuff goes a long way with people.
Well, thank you. I mean, ultimately, it is a guide service, right? So it is a service-based business. And again, like, I'm going to give Donald credit for the soup or anything that would, you know, do cooking, that kind of thing. But, I mean, he really did kind of help dial me in back in the day of, like, this is not that, you know, it's almost like you need to be the cruise director, right? Somebody's going to come here, right. A group of guys are going to come here for, you know, 3 days. Like, you got to tell them about the area. You gotta, you know, they just don't want to hunt. They want to go get good food. They want to go see different things that maybe they haven't ever seen the Atlantic Ocean. Right. So you gotta think, even though that's very, something that's very daily for me, you know, something that maybe is not, you know, a daily occurrence for them. So like, it's just,
sure.
I call it being the crew. When younger people ask me, guys specifically, hey, I want to be a guide. You know, how, what? It's like, it's more about people skills. It's, you know, yes, can you, you know, it's not about me hunting. I don't take my gun anymore. I really don't. So it's not about them hunting.
Right.
It's about them providing a service, providing a good time to people that are paying hard-earned money. You know, and they're giving it the guide or you know, the guide himself or the guide service. So it's that kind of thing where like you really, it's a service and you really do need to provide a service. Have I fallen short? There's a couple instances where I can remember they wanted to shoot brant specifically. I didn't take good notes or I didn't remember. And the brant season got shorter and the brant season wasn't open when they showed up or yeah. when they were en route. And I was like, hey, look, let's just rebook. And they're like, no, we already got our plane tickets on and on and on. And that's a trip. I would guess that I probably got, you know, cussed a little bit here and there just because it was just, you know, one day sea duck hunting, it was super, super rough. You know, two of the four guys are throwing up. The next day we go out, it's like glass and like, we hardly had a bird decoy. So it was a 2-day hunt. And I know they went away saying like, what did we just do? You know, kind of thing. But I did say, hey, let's just do it next year. I'm like, no, we're coming anyway. We're coming anyway. So, you know, am I perfect? No, but I really do try to, you know, put my best foot forward and provide the service, you know?
Yeah. Well, it definitely shows you've been doing it long enough. Like I said, you're definitely doing something right there. So you mentioned, getting an early start in the internet and having a website and things. It's interesting. I'm only about 9 years behind you. We grew up in a time without cell phones, without internet. But you've built a pretty strong social media following. Was that intentional or did that just kind of happen?
I mean, so let's forget about social media, but let's just say the internet itself. Again, I'll say Donald Hughes. He taught me all about the internet in 1994. And he's like, look, this is something you need to learn, and this will help you grow. But at the same time, you're going to bring attention to yourself, and there's going to be others that will want to do what you're doing too. So you're kind of creating maybe some of your own competition, but you're going to really need to – you're going to need to learn this and do this because this is how you're going to grow, and this is how you're going to promote yourself. So that said, like let's say specifically Instagram. My daughter got me into it. I was like, I don't know, you know, I don't have that much time, you know, on and on and on. And specifically back in the day, I took a lot of still photos. She's like, it's just about pictures. Well, today it's kind of evolved into, you know, maybe more video based than
absolutely
pictures. Yep. You know, that kind of thing, right? But anyway, I just remember, yeah, okay, I signed up and I was like, wow, if I could, you know, maybe get 1,000 followers, that'd be cool. So it just kind of evolved of like, I guess if you want to say I'm a little bit of addicted to it, you could say that. but on the serious side, honestly, with everything that I do, I mean, like, and if Karen could hear me, she'd agree because it is, I take the social media aspect of what I do very serious, and it's something, it's part of the job. And I get up amongst weather and other things that I look at, you know, like let's self-promote.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much, you know, pretty much what you do. I had a couple other people in the industry way back in the day, you know, tell me, hey, and they taught me this, that like I can't say I'm the best. If you want to say that I'm the best, well then, okay, it's Brian's opinion, and you know,
it's Jeff must plan.
Be Jeff must be good. But if Jeff says it, not to talk about myself in the third party, but you know, if I say it about myself, I'm going to come across arrogant, you know, ego, you know, whatever negative word you want to put. So it's like kind of that fine balance of like how do you promote yourself? How do I promote myself, but don't come across as that, you know, hey, you know, Jeff's ego or Jeff's arrogant kind of thing. So it's right. that kind of a fine line. And I mean, the stuff I post up, just like with the cooking and everything else we do, I mean, it is real. It's who I am. And it's do we think about what I, you know, do we think about certain situations? Sure. But I mean, pretty much everything I do is it's real, it's live, or it's off the cuff. It's not, you know, it's not, I don't say, hey, let's set this here, let's bring this over here, you know, and but you know,
yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's very organic. I mean, one of my favorite things is when you go live carving decoys. It's
thank you.
It's just real, and you're being yourself, and you're humble, and you know, just having fun. That really comes across. So what you're trying to project and what you're saying there, it definitely comes across that way.
Thank you. I mean, that's the true intent, and pretty much again, like everything we do, it's real, and it's the life that we live, and you know, good or bad. I mean, you know, Karen, in the beginning, it took her a little while. You know, I've been with Karen since 2013. We got married in 2016. And it took her a little bit, you know, today she'll still probably tell you she doesn't appreciate when I, you know, point the camera in her face, but you know, but she, you know, she's kind of gotten over that and kind of, hey, that's Jeff. That's what we got to do.
Sure.
We've been dog training recently with a bunch of different people. So she's filming me running the dogs, and there's been some fellows there like to our friends, like, hey, what are they videoing? Like, what are they doing? Like, is this good? Is this bad? Like, should we be, you know, like, what are they doing? Kind of thing. It's like, that's what they do. You know, that's what they do. Yeah. So, I do have to say, it's like, it definitely has kind of taken, I didn't edit anything yet today on the computer, but I mean, I downloaded everything that she sent or that she took today. And I think we're gonna have a slow morning tomorrow. So I'll kind of catch up on it tomorrow. But like, I definitely put effort into to doing what I do, and regardless whether it's the guiding ducks, dogs, or decoys, I mean, I put all the effort that I can, because it's all that I do. I put it into it.
Absolutely. This episode is also brought to you by Rigam Wright Waterfowl, producers of the most well-designed and well-built products, tried and tested by the most heavily seasoned hunters on the planet. Their mission has always been and will always be to design, build, and supply the most innovative and high-performance hunting products available at a reasonable price. They will not succumb to outside pressure to cheapen their products and will continue to take bold steps and huge risks to separate themselves from their competition. They dominate in customer service, knowing that their end-use customers are the very backbone of their existence. Above all else, they operate with honesty and integrity and treat people fairly, never compromising these principles in pursuit of profit. Check them out at rigamright.com or your favorite local outdoor retailer. So you mentioned that you get a lot of negative feedback. What do you think is the number one thing that you hear from everybody that's hating on you?
So people that hunt, it's just that, sorry about that. People, actually a couple, my neighbor, so you can't see it obviously, but there's wood, stop. There's woods right there. His driveway goes up to his, he has a small pond, like literally right at the front porch. And wood ducks, he has three wood duck boxes, and the wood ducks, actually, she just, you know, Scooter just saw them, but the wood ducks came through, and they fly up his driveway in between the woods there. But what do people hate on? There are, in the beginning, especially during duck season, I will check to see, like, some of the comments you can tell. If you can tell, hey, why are they shooting rifles in the ocean, or all that lead is now on the bottom of the ocean? Well, that's obviously somebody does not They may hunt, but they don't waterfowl hunt, right? So you can kind of dismiss those comments. But there are people. There's people. The people that hunt kind of just ragging on people missing. There's this whole thing when a duck lands and they're shooting it on the water. Is that a bird at rest? Is that illegal? I've actually had a few good DNR friends that follow along with me too. What we're doing, and they kind of laugh at the videos, but I've even questioned them. And like, hey, when these people say this, like, to me, it's not. I mean, we just didn't. The bird flew in. I guess if you want to say it was at, it landed, but is it at rest? To me, at rest is if there's a pond over there, and I know people jump shoot, you know, geese, specifically snow geese, all the time.
Sure.
But if there's a pond, those birds are over there sleeping, resting. That's different than when a bird comes in, which I would tell you. If somebody wants to go back and watch that 35 million video reels, the bird definitely got touched as it came in. So it's not like it's unharmed. They were shooting at it as it came in, but then it was a big swell. The patterns don't look very good. And there's many, many shots to get this bird. So to answer your question, there's people that hunt that are kind of ragging on, hey, if I was there, or you need to get better hunters because I could have killed that bird. And I was like, all right, well, come on and show me how you can do this. But I would say probably 15-20%. The rest of it is just people that just don't hunt. And specifically, I would say are from Europe or Australia, not from North America.
Okay.
It seems to be. But anyway.
Yeah. Man, I hope I get good enough someday where I can make fun of somebody for missing.
I can miss with the best of us, though.
No doubt about it. So what do you think? No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and to be fair, honestly, even though my boat's very stable, again, you're on the ocean, there's a swell.
Oh, yeah.
The boat's rocking and rolling. If somebody doesn't get off their seat and get their butt off a little bit, we talked about it today, dog training, because somebody questioned me about these videos. I was like, I've actually seen people take and lay their gun barrel on the gunwale of the boat. It's like they're just at the mercy of the boat moving. And a duck on the water is very hard to kill, especially with larger shots. So anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sorry I interrupted you.
That's okay. What do you think your most memorable hunt of all time was?
Man, I have many of them, I would say. We used to film for a DVD series and a TV show. There's some West Coast hunts with certain friends of mine, state of Washington, and in Idaho, and in Oregon. There's some, shooting really people. Shot my Harlequin in Washington. I shot Barrow's Goldeneye way back in the day in Washington when you could still shoot seven of them. Mm-hmm. Got to shoot the Snake River with a very good friend of mine. That's a very memorable hunt. We got to shoot cacklers with fellows from Dave Smith Decoys. That's something that's very memorable. I've been out on the West Coast, specifically Northwest. Been out on St. Paul Island, shoot King Eider there. There used to be and they've done away with it also, but there was a February sea duck season specifically to shoot eider on the Bay of Fundy. The tide there where we hunted was 35 feet. It's 6 feet an hour. You could see, as you're sitting there on the rocks, you can see the water rising. It's 6 feet in an hour. So there's those trips, going to PEI early on. That's why we go back to PEI, Prince Edward Island, Canada now. I'm probably leaving something out in there. But those are some very memorable hunts. My old dog Coot, that's not with, she hadn't been with us for many, many years. Got to shoot canvas back with her on the Delta Marsh, in Manitoba. That's something that jumps out at me. I don't want to say that I've been everywhere and done everything, but I do have lots of great memories. I have memories that I still want to make, there's still certain bucket list hunts that I want to go do. So
for sure. Do you have a favorite species?
I guess if you had to say one duck, well, I love Brant, and Skoda are near and dear to my heart. The little dog sitting next to me, her name is Skoda. She's only about 26 months old. Duck, I would have to say almost honestly a Barrow's Goldeneye. You can shoot one on Prince Edward Island, Canada. It's probably the only place that I know on the East Coast that you can go and consistently shoot a Barrow's Goldeneye. And Karen and I both went and shot one. I've shot them there before. in 2010. And again, we could shoot seven of them in Washington back in the day. And we went back up this year to shoot one. So maybe that, if I had to say a duck, that may be my personally favorite duck to target. But Brant is very high on the list too.
Okay. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen while hunting or just being outdoors in general?
Like as far as birds go, like there's a little bird. It's kind of, the joke is I've said that they're flying, anyway. It's a flying penguin. Basically, it's a little bird called a razor-billed auk. If you recall the hurricane that landed in New Jersey, Sandy, back in the day, we'd have seen a few prior to that. That year, we saw a tremendous amount of razor-billed auks. Kind of got them, I guess, mixed up a little bit. They would come south. We don't shoot those. We have shot five over the years here on the ocean. We have shot five king eider, and the last two king eider were drake king eider. So that's kind of an oddity, something that was very, actually the last one we shot, it flew through, I yelled out eider, and it hit the water, and I'm like, I wanted to call my shot before we went over and picked it up. I was like, I don't want to upset anybody if it's not, but I said, I just want to go on record as that's a king eider. And they're like, are you sure? I was like, take a look at it, man. Like, I'm looking at it. It sure looks like a king eider to me. Anyway, went over there, was a king eider. So we see some harlequin here in Maryland. We've decoyed them before. We can't shoot them. So that's kind of a neat oddity that would decoy. Now that's probably as far as birds go. I've seen gun parts and pieces go overboard before. springs and shims go, chomp, and when somebody's messing with their gun, and I've seen guys shoot a gun with no choke and the barrel never explode or anything, but like, you know, as I'm sitting there like looking down the road, I was like, what's wrong with his gun? Like, what do you, that would have a bulge in it, that kind of thing, and he didn't have a choke in his gun, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, that's probably the, you know, knock on wood, you know, never anything, you know, negative as far as, you know, dangerous or life threatening as far as being on
okay.
We're out in open water all the time. You know, I have plenty of safety equipment on the boat. I have my little safety speech that I say each morning. Quite often, because where we're at in Ocean City, I call the Coast Guard each morning just to say, hey, when somebody calls you, because I am waving a black flag, you know, it's us. They appreciate that. But now over the years, haven't really run into anything negative, hunter to hunter kind of thing. You know, non-hunter to us, haven't really experienced anything like that. You know, do see some weird comments on some Facebook groups of like, again, like, why are people, I was walking the beach and why are people shooting rifles in the ocean, or, you know, that kind of thing. So, people always send me those screenshots, say, hey, look, they're talking about you, or, you know, that kind of thing. But now over the years, it's been, I've seen pretty much, I think the only duck I can tell you that we have never shot over a sea duck rig would be a cinnamon teal. We don't see Barrow's golden eye. But other than that, I think we've shot every duck someplace or another, you know, over the sea duck rig. I kind of think that, you know, people want to tell me how stupid sea ducks are, but like that, we're sitting in an open boat and have a Canada goose circle three times and land like in the decoys. I think more of what I tell people is that, you know, birds are conditioned and open water does not, you know, offer them or serve that much negativeness, if you will.
Right.
That open water.
Makes sense.
Yeah, open water is pretty much harmless to them, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that I've had an eagle pick up a mallard and a bluebill over the years that we couldn't get out there quick enough to get it, and an eagle came by and picked that up. But no, that's a big shark. Ran into a big shark. It was the third week of December. In 2013, the duck boat at the time was 25 feet long, and the tiger shark was, you could see he hung out with us. It was pretty easy to see him, but he had to be half length of the boat, you know, so whatever you want to call him, you know, 12, I always say, you know, 12, 13 foot.
Sure.
But that was something that really got my attention. And up to that point, I always had a dog with me, and as long as the birds were dead, you know, send a dog, and I didn't think much about it.
Yeah.
The shark experience made me feel a little irresponsible over the years of how often, you know, again, if it was dead, the dogs love to do it, and I'd let them, you know, swim all day long there.
Interesting. This episode is also brought to you by Flight Day Ammunition. Flight Day Ammo was born in the heart of the Mississippi Flyway in west central Missouri. Founder Ben Myers and his family have duck hunted this region of the country for over 50 years. Ben's passion for quality ammunition led to the development of his own brand. Flight Day utilizes the best components in the ammo industry, which provides unmatched quality, patterns, and lethality. Check them out at flightdayammo.com and be sure to use discount code MW10 at checkout to save 10%. So you got to be pretty far from shore, right? There's regulations on being way out there.
So although there is no more special sea duck season in Maryland to target open water ducks, specifically sea ducks, you must be 800 yards from any land. Mm. So that's the minimum distance we need to be.
What kind of depths are you working in there?
It depends, anywhere from Chesapeake Bay, the back bays, you know, 8 feet deep to up to 70 feet deep. So okay. it just depends.
So how are you dealing with that depth with your setups? What are you using for decoys?
The decoys I'm using are pretty much everything, you know, my own made birds. Currently these days, I call them foamzillas. Basically, it's the biggest lobster float I can find, 9 inch by 16, cut it in half, put it on a bottom board and put a nice silhouette head on them. But I'm running 12 of those on a long line. On the upwind side, I usually put about 30 pounds. I'm using wind to sash weights that are 15 pounds mm-hmm. each or so. So upwind side, I'm using 30 pounds. Downwind side, I can get away with just 15 pounds. I anchor the boat up. I leave the anchor in the water. I have a float on the boat, a float on the line. So when we get a bird, you know, just pitch it off and we can go run over there. I don't reset the anchor every time. I use long lines and heavy weights.
That's got to be pretty rewarding, using your own decoys that you carve.
It really has. Way back in the day, the Brant rig was entire. They weren't mine. They were friends' birds, mm-hmm. and I was still using plastic sea ducks. And it would have been about 2009, I think. Anyway, that's kind of when I made the switch. I was like, hey, you know, I'm doing the whole decoy thing. Like, I need to shoot over my own birds, kind of thing. And so that was about 2009 is when I made the official switch over to my own sea ducks.
What year did you get into the carving?
Way before the guiding, probably.
Okay.
1992 or 1993.
Gotcha. So if somebody's looking to come out and hunt with you, what kind of things could they expect?
Well, I do everything. Currently, Steve Hoover calls it the world's largest duck boat. It's a 32-foot duck water. It's the Ocean model. I've got a 350 Suzuki on it. I have up to 6 very large seats. The seats are, you know, 24 inches wide. They're big, comfortable seats. And that would be a comment that I get a lot, that, hey, this is the nicest seat I've ever shot ducks from. now, what to expect? Expect a good time. It's a gentleman's hunt. You're not shooting wood ducks. So, it's not the first 45 minutes to an hour. If anything, as it gets brighter, they fly better. You don't have to shoot your limit out of this flock. Let's take our time. Especially now, it's only three bird per person as far as scoter go, or really any scoter, old squall, or eider. I usually meet about an hour before sunrise, and hour before gunning time. Get out there. The boat's plenty big. People bring coolers. I always say bring more than what you need because there's plenty of room in the boat. We get set up, and then it kind of happens. And my two biggest problems are if it's too windy, that wind makes waves. So if it's too windy and the ocean is rough and we can't get out on the ocean, the backup spots are not going to be as good. The flip side of that is when there is no wind and it's like glass, they fly. But, man, we're sitting there in a 32-foot boat. the decoys aren't moving, and they'll come up to the decoys, and maybe if you have 50 yards, that was about it, and they're gone. They're not going to decoy nice. So I do need a nice chop, a nice wind to make things happen. But you know, I'm can't control the wind, can't control the weather. But yeah, again, like I just, if you bring a good attitude, you're going to have a good time. And it's the kind of thing where it's, you don't have to shoot your limit out of this one bunch coming. The more the morning goes on, they fly better. And the thing is, a lot of times today too, is it's like a bucket list hunt where they need a surf scoter or a common scoter or a white wing, or they need one of,
right?
So it's not, in the beginning, it was all about volume. They needed to shoot their limit. And today I have people call me, "Hey man, do you think we can shoot a surf scoter? I just need one." And yeah, I think we can do that. You know, let's come. So they come with that attitude where they don't need to shoot a boatload of them. They need to shoot one to say they've shot it, to get their picture, to get it mounted, whatever the case may be. It's a bucket list hunt for them. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of new guys, especially in Pennsylvania, where they're pretty limited to the waterfowl opportunities we have here. And some of them might say, you know, I'm new and I don't think I'm ready to go on a guided hunt. But, you know, I just tell them, hey, these guides are professionals. You know, just let them know when you call them to book the trip. You know, I'm new to this, and they'll walk you through it. I mean, I'm sure you've had plenty of newer hunters that might have had a lot of questions. And how did you handle that?
Well, my phone, I always tell people, my phone's always on, text or call. The question I can't answer is the one you don't ask. So it's not, you know, it's not, I'm always very open. Again, I can't really, I know generally what the questions, more or less my little, I'm going to say itinerary, but the timeline I just told you, that's probably the biggest question. Like, hey, how does this really work? What are we doing? How long do we hunt? You know, how many birds should we expect to see? That kind of thing. I will say this, I know there's a strong DIY, you know, movement out there that everybody wants to do it on their own. But I myself, if I want to shoot a bird specific, you know, I need to go with somebody that is knowledgeable
and
specialized in that species that I want to target. So I think that's really where, if there is some negativeness, I don't go on guided hunts. Well, there's certain birds that you're going to have to.
No doubt.
Yeah. I always tell people too, I mean, you can be people that don't, I think people that are very curious to like what I'm doing. And I always say, hey man, like you could be the most avid waterfowl hunter from Kansas. You can shoot geese and puddle ducks and everything that you have. And you've got everything you need to do. But I said, there's a certain amount of birds out there that specifically sea ducks that are generally typically, you know, 90% or on salt water, you're going to have to go to the East Coast or the West Coast. So maybe, you know, you don't have the boat. There used to be, I used to have to buy a $5.50 gunnery license where there was actually a boat size requirement. And now today they just, you don't have to buy that gunning rig license anymore. But to be legal in Maryland to shoot shoot open water ducks, shoot sea ducks, you must have a Maryland resident with you. And guys will be, you know, like, oh, wow, that's just to protect me. I was like, no, I think it's really to protect you that, again, you're not coming from Kansas in a canoe thinking you're going to go out, you know, even on the Chesapeake Bay and go shoot sea ducks on your own, because it's, you do need certain equipment, specifically, you know, seaworthy boats to day in and day out to do this.
Absolutely. One thing I enjoy when you go through the season, you're on there every morning laying out what you're going to do and calling out whatever day it is, you know, day 50 of the Maryland waterfowl season. You're always smiling. How do you keep that passion alive year after year?
I love what I do. I mean, I truly do. I get up at 2 a.m. and I'm not going to meet my guys till 5:30, quarter of six. I never want to be late. I love to take my time. I get up and I'm especially when it's cold out, like there's not many people out doing what we're doing. Right. So forget about duck hunting. When I'm driving, you know, I'm usually make my first stop to Wawa. I don't pass many vehicles going to Wawa. You know what I mean? So it's that kind of thing where I like to get up. I like to be on, you know, I want to be waiting on you. I don't want you waiting on me. But to rewind, man, I love what I do. I feel very fortunate that this is the way I make my living.
Yeah, it shows.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So where do you see Pit Boss Waterfowl in the next 5 years? Do you have anything on the horizon that you plan on adding, or are you just going to kind of keep doing what you're doing?
Karen and I were just talking about this yesterday, that maybe to stretch out my longevity in this career, because I truly don't have an exit plan currently. Am I going to retire? I don't think so. But I guess maybe something that might help physically help me out. And I've had a couple people tell me again, kind of the is it legal? But I really want to do a spot lock trolling motor on the duck boat, where I won't have to use an anchor. In theory, I won't have to use an anchor.
Okay.
I'm gonna mount it. I always anchor from the stern, so that everybody's downwind of me. You know, it's about if we anchor from the bow, you know, I'm in the best spot. When I anchor from the stern, you'd be in the bow. You're in the best spot. You know, the birds come up, they cut across the bow, or they, you know, decoy very nice. So I think if that spot lock trolling motor, I said that might help me get a couple extra years out of my guiding career. But now I'm just going to keep doing it. I guess I can't do it anymore. So,
okay.
Yep. That's, I don't know if that's a good way to look at it or not, but truly I don't have, we talk about this all the time, and it's maybe in like the last year to two, year and a half to 2 years, you know, people ask me this, that, and the other, like, what am I really going to be doing? I was like, I really don't have an exit strategy. So yeah. I'm in it full. I'm in it 100%. So this is what I do, and we'll see how long I can do it.
Well, you seem to got it dialed in. So really it's just, you know, fine tuning a little bit here and there maybe.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's just, we have some plans here. I don't know. Here. So like jokingly, I call this PBHQ, Pit Boss World Headquarters, 3.5 acres here in Whaleyville. We built an 8,200 square foot barn dominium, big shop, living spaces behind me. And we wanted to do, you know, basically have some lodging here, and I need to get the lodging done. So that would be something added into the future, that people can actually stay here. I don't think everybody will stay here, but I have people, you know, this coming year, hey man, if you get the lodging done, let us know, we'll stay there. That kind of thing. So kind of more cool. Not that I'm a big entertainer, but, you know, come hang out. You know, the decoy shop's here. The dogs are here. Let's cook something. Let's eat, drink, have a good time. Let's get up. You know, let's go shoot ducks tomorrow. Let's, you know, come back and do the same thing in the evenings, you know.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing. So hopefully that will be it's a little slower than what I've wanted, you know, how I've wanted it to happen, but that's still on our radar too, to get that done.
Okay. This episode is also brought to you by CK Custom Calls, custom built in the USA from the great state of Texas, handmade in a world of mass produced. Check out their calls on their Instagram and Facebook pages at CK Custom Calls. They showcase calls for sale there, and you can also contact them for a custom order. So you're always on the go. I mean, if you're not training dogs, you're carving decoys. If you're not doing that, you're hunting, guiding clients. If you do unwind, what is it? What's your go-to besides the good food that you're always smoking? What's your go-to after a long day?
Maybe a little Crown Royal Black. That always kind of helps ease my evenings.
Good choice.
Thank you. I get up early though, so again during duck season I get up early. But how do I unwind? I mean, I don't. Karen and I, Karen's my best friend. We're constantly together. She basically quit her job when we moved here to help me be more productive here. How do we unwind? We like to do things with the dogs, and the trips that we can take with the dogs. You know, it's kind of us, if you want to say vacation, but that's kind of how we get away and we enjoy. We got Scoter here this coming Friday. She'll be in a master hunt test just up the road, so we enjoy doing that. We just kind of enjoy, not to be like corny to say we just enjoy life, but I mean, we enjoy what's
that's
in our
important.
Life, what's
yeah.
in our life, we enjoy. And that's part of the 3.5 acres here is not 100% fenced yet. That's another that's still on the to-do list, but I mean enough of it is that the dogs that we have, they live a good life here with us. We'd like to specifically Skoda here to my left, get a master hunter on her, get her qualified all age, maybe get at least a half an all age point on her. We'd like to breed her. We just want to enjoy our lives. And I tell people maybe it's an excuse, but I don't know I'm going to be here next month, but I want to be, but I'm not sure about next month, right? So I need to do today what we need to do, because if you keep saying someday I want to do this and someday
no
I want to
do
that, someday never gets here if you don't do it, right?
That's so for sure.
Maybe a little, I don't know. My mother's still alive, and if she was part of this conversation, she would tell you that I'm just saying that to justify doing what I want to do. But the truth is, you don't know when the end is, right? So
yeah, it's a fact.
You better do it. You better do it today. You better do it, right? Karen's mother. Karen's from Australia. Her mother is 88 years old. She calls us kids, but she'd say, kids, do today what you need to do. Do it. Don't wait. And the same with my dad's old. My mom and dad are 88, 89. My dad's health is not really good right at the moment, and he's remarried, and his wife is telling us, you better do what you want to do today. Because the reality is that that's where we're going to be someday. So, get it done today and do what you want to do today. I don't mean to just throw caution to the wind and be crazy, but at the same time, nothing wrong with taking a little bit of risk here and there. And again,
right.
you don't know what I have a friend that tells me he's playing long ball, that I need to play long ball with him, but he's half my age. Mm-hmm. Your long ball is much longer than mine. I've had some people get on. Sorry about the dogs.
That's all right.
I've had some people get on me. Skoder is 26 months old. I've got big aspirations for her, and I've done a lot with her. And we were in South Carolina in February, and a dog trainer friend, a younger fellas, he's saying, hey, man, you might be pushing her a little bit. Maybe you're doing a lot with her. She's young. I looked at him and said, hey, man, you're younger than my daughter. And it's a whole thing of, again, I don't know I'm going to be here next month. I need to do today what I need to do today with her. And eventually he said, point taken. And we're different stages in different places,
Sure.
So, again, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I really
absolutely.
I really do. And Karen, she's right on board with me, is we need to do what we want to do now. Because, who knows what's going to happen in the future, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah, and with so much negativity in the world today, I love to see people I know enjoying life, like you said, and watching you and Karen. And I want everybody to have that. I'm living it myself. I'm very blessed. The good Lord's been good to me and my family. And like you said, you never know. So
you don't.
That's some great advice right there, my friend.
I'm just the old guy now. So I will be. I didn't say the age earlier, but in a couple of weeks I'll be 60.
Mm.
When I turned 50, it truly didn't bother me, except for the fact is, here's the beginning, here's 50. The ending is probably closer than the beginning.
Yeah.
But 60 may actually, the number 60 may actually bother me.
Yeah, I could see where you're coming from with that. I turned 50 in October, and I thought it would bother me a little more than it did. It really didn't, but you make a lot of sense on the other end of that.
Yeah, I mean, and the number 50 didn't bother me, but again, it did put on the horizon of hey, go ahead, go, come on, go. Oh, she's being stupid. She's up in one of these chairs with me and won't jump down. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
But yeah, it didn't, again, it just alerted me as hey, the ending's probably closer than what the beginning yeah. of all this is. So now you turn. Really, what happened was we bred one of our older female rye, and she had pups a year ago February. And I'm thinking to myself, it's a great experience. If nobody's ever, had a litter of puppies, whelp puppies, it truly is to me it's a really cool experience. I've only done three over the years, but where I'm going with this is. I would say that the dogs are, in my mind, a lab. We've had one cancer, got a younger one at 8 years old, but everybody else has lived 12, 13 years old. So I'm thinking, man, these puppies just realize, sitting there thinking about it. I'm like, okay, 10 years, 12 years, like, whoa, wait a second. In 10 years, I'll be 70.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. That's why 60 bothered me. I was like, holy moly. And Karen's like, yeah, it doesn't really, it's just a number. It's just, it's just a number. I was like, yeah, but like the reality
put it in that perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. But the reality is when these guys are 10 years old, I'm going to be 69, 70, 71 years old, depending on how long they live. And I said, that's wow. I need to, I need to get stuff done with them. Again, that's my whole theme of like, you need to do what you need to do now.
Absolutely.
Don't wait on it.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. I've got some rapid fire questions for you to wrap up if you're ready.
Let's do it.
What's your favorite waterfowl recipe?
Anything pretty much on the grill. Actually, I shared one tonight, a Scoter one Karen came up with, where basically, to me, not to go off on a tangent, but specifically with Scoter and Brant, it's all about, they're not fishy. They're going to be strong. They're going to be iron-rich blood, so you need to soak them out.
Hmm.
But basically, she makes up a little ponzo sauce, some bacon and a jalapeno, and we do them on the grill.
What's in the ponzo sauce?
I have it written down.
I'll have to look it up.
I can send it to you. Off the top of my head, I don't know. But okay. She kind of worked on it a little bit. But again, what I would say to anyone is the key in all this is like they need to be soaked out 2 to 3 days. And try to change that water and get the blood out of them.
Interesting. What's your favorite shotgun?
I'd have to say a Benelli.
Okay.
Although I do have in same kind of family, I do have an older Franke over and under that I've enjoyed shooting over the years too.
Gotcha. Very nice. What's your favorite snack in the blind?
Man, usually during duck season, and I'm currently in that mode too. Like I try not to do carbs and sugar, so it's going to be anything protein. I'm not, I used to be the little Debbie guy way back in the day, and that's not who I am today. So anything protein based, and kind of during the season it changes, but it's either it's just going to be anything protein based.
Okay. Personally, do you prefer to hunt marshes, lakes, rivers, or big water?
Come on, man. Honestly, day in and day out, I want to be on the ocean for the guiding.
Awesome.
Personally, again, we go to PEI. I do enjoy the diversity of shooting ducks in a field, shooting geese in a field, and shooting ducks on small creeks and small pieces of water off the big water. But day in and day out, definitely is the ocean is the place I want to be.
Yeah, these last two, I think we already got the answers to these. I always ask if you like the boat, kayak, or walk-in, but I think you got that pretty sweet boat that you like to get out on in the ocean.
Well, that and or, again, like specifically PEI is the most fun hunting that I do. It is nice to be able to drive in a vehicle to the field and or,
sure
very,
is.
Very close to the water. So, but yeah, day in and day out, I'm boating in.
All right, my friend. Well, I appreciate you taking the time tonight. I want to give you a chance to let everybody know where they can find you.
Brian, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you very much for reaching out, and I enjoy following along with you, specifically on Instagram.
Thank you.
100%.
Appreciate that. Yep. Yeah, look him up, Pit Boss Waterfowl. He's on Instagram. He's got a website. You're booked out for all next year, or do you got some spots?
I think I'm about 10 days are still open now for the 2025-26 season.
Good deal. Yeah, I'll have to keep in touch whenever you get everything set up down there. I'd like to come down and check out the shop.
More than welcome to visit anytime you like.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Big thanks again to Jeff for taking time out of his day to join me on the show. And thank you all for tuning into this episode. I really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok at Migration Waterfowl. We also have a Facebook group for the podcast. Please join us there as well. And if you could, please check out our YouTube channel and subscribe while you are there. Lots of great content coming that way throughout the rest of the year. You can find the link to our merchandise store in the show notes below or on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Check out our shirts, hoodies, thermoses, coffee, and more over there. And now, through the end of April, 10% of everything we sell will go to Delta Waterfowl. We have a brand new design over there,
check out our duck stamp t-shirt and hoodie while supplies last. If you like what you've heard here, please take a moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Send me a message or email after you leave the review, and I will mail you a podcast decal. And get out there and enjoy the outdoors, but make sure you seek out a relationship with the one who created everything. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58 says, "Therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." And remember, the migration is coming. Be ready when it arrives. Tune in next week to hear another great guest on the Migration Waterfowl Podcast.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.